I never allowed myself to be proud of myself because I was so racked with fear that people were going to think that I somehow thought I was better than them. And that was what drove me and drove everything. So again, it was like at that age, I was just like just shrinking and drinking and drinking because I thought that that was going to be the easiest way to navigate life.
Mandy, you've been on my dream list for podcasts for a while. So this is a very exciting time for me right now.
I'm so appreciative. I'm so honored. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been so cool to see you navigate your career and your personal life so gracefully and openly. It's been 20 years of very impactful roles. A Walk to Remember probably defined a very specific time in my life. And then Princess Diaries, a cult favorite. And you know what? I told myself that I have to share a story with you because I don't think I've ever spoken about it. And unfortunately, there is footage of it. But I remember after seeing you perform Stupid Cupid on Princess Diaries, I ran to my mom and I was like, listen, there's a family function that is coming up and I have to perform this in front of everyone. This is crucial for it to happen. And I was so adamant that she sewed me like a 60s dress. I got my family friends to do backup dancing. It was a whole thing. And it was inspired by you.
I am impressed. I bet your performance was way better than mine. Guaranteed.
I mean, it was completely inappropriate because it was someone's 60th birthday. So there was really no place for that. But I got my Mandy moment and I could, you know, move on with my life. So just wanted to share that with you.
Another
little moment. It's been really cool, like I mentioned, to, you know, see you in all these different roles that I feel like also represented different times in your life. And there's something that I've realized when I sat down to write down the things I want to talk to you about. You are the most unproblematic celebrity that I've encountered. And you've had a long career.
I feel like we could find some people who are way more unproblematic, but sure, I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you very much.
How did you navigate that from coming into the scene at the age of 15?
Honestly, I think it's a combination of my parents, who I really give most of the credit to, like hats off to them. They, I think, just did a good job instilling, you know, a good moral compass in myself and my brothers. And I also had them with me on the road, like traveling with me when I was young and starting out in the industry and touring and whatnot. I always had mom or dad with me. And I think because they weren't interested in doing anything in a professional capacity, they just wanted to be mom and dad. Like that was incredible. It meant that I like had the safety net of their presence with me every step of the way. But we also got to like learn about the business together. And I didn't have to ever fear that they were only hanging around because, you know, they wanted some sort of like a golden ticket. So mom and dad, just like across the board. And I think because of that, I was very much allowed to be a teenager. Like I wanted to go to the mall. I wanted to go to theme parks. I wanted to go out to dinners and high school functions and stuff with my friends. And I was very much allowed to live that life, and the duality of also being a professional and that capacity of having, you know, a ton of adult responsibility at the same time. It's like I could wear one hat and then I could put on the other hat. And I think because I was allowed to do a little bit of that, I really had no interest in, you know, going to like nightclubs or doing anything. I still don't. It's like I didn't get that gene. Like I just skipped over that whole phase of my life.
There were no like a rebel moments where you just let me experience this. Let me find out who I am.
No, I mean, I guess it was rebellious, like getting married at 24. That wasn't a great idea, but an experience I learned from nonetheless. And it led me to where I am today with like the most incredible partner and family. So I'm grateful for it. But that felt like maybe more of a rebellious move than like going and getting like wasted at a club or something.
I mean, you were surrounded with young Hollywood and it was such a it was a lot happening. I feel like even back then in the 90s and early 2000s, like you guys were just superheroes to the world, like for teenagers, right? It's not so much happening today. I don't see that kind of level of idolizing teenage, you know, pop stars or actors. Back then it was just a whole other thing. So the fact that you didn't get swept by all of that is honestly remarkable.
You're kind, well, I think with like the advent of social media, like there's no room to idolize people in the same way. You just know too much about everybody. There's too much information out there, you know? That's so it's like when I was growing up and when I was that age and I also was a fan of all of those same people, it's like you had teen magazines, you had, you know, news shows occasionally, like what you could see an interview on like Entertainment Tonight or maybe on some late night show or something. But beyond that, you had to wait for the actual music. Websites were just becoming something and message boards and stuff, but there was no real, like the access we have to all of the information and pictures, and we're just inundated with information now that young people weren't, you know, 20 years ago. It's just it's a different thing altogether.
We were very hungry. I mean, I collected every poster, every cover, every... That was...
It was like there's something so nostalgic about that too, because I think my kids will never have that same experience. Like they could just go online and look at someone's like social media, you know, whatever it is 10 years from now. It won't be TikTok or Instagram, but, you know, but back in our day, it's like, yeah, you had to wait month to month and you would collect those posters and, you know, those, like you'd go to Tower Records when an album was released, and it just like there was such fanfare, and like it was all this like protocol around things that just doesn't exist anymore, that never will again.
Guys, I cannot wait to tell you about today's sponsor, Magic Spoon. This is a little intro to this. You hear the crunch? It's the intro. So last week, I brought the boys to record a podcast episode with me. And obviously, the minute we arrive anywhere, the first thing they say is, I'm hungry, although I fed them at home. But they were looking for a little treat. So I got the Magic Spoon cereal boxes out of the cupboard. They didn't even know they're around. And they tried them, and it was... the magical formula for a successful day overall. But honestly, in no time, all of us were walking around the office with bowls, with our cereal, with a little milk. It was truly a bonding moment for us here. Magic Spoon comes in a variety pack and it has four flavors. So we have the fruity, we have the frosted, we have the peanut butter, and we have the cocoa. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. All of this is making my past holistic nutrition self very happy. If I had to choose my favorite flavor, I would say it's cocoa, but also, no, you know what? I have to say it's cocoa and frosted. I have two, and there's nothing I can do about it. And my favorite thing about Magic Spoon is how it stays crunchy, even in a bowl with milk. Now that's magic. Go to magicspoon.com/notalone and try a variety pack today. And be sure to use my promo code NOTALONE at checkout to save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident with their product that it is backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high protein cereal at magicspoon.com/notalone and use my promo code NOTALONE to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Do you feel that shift also in Hollywood, just in general, the way just celebrities are today compared to what you used to see?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the way that people are celebrated, in the way that we exchange information with one another. I mean, I also think it's funny now that it's obviously a part of the economy and the way that who you are and what you bring to the table in that capacity, whether it's social media followers or having an online presence or not an online presence, like really can make a difference in casting as well. Which sounds silly, but I guess, you know, that's an important part of the equation. It's part of the job now. Like when you get cast in a movie, like what kind of reach do you have? Or are you someone who's going to like do all of the media that you need to do? And if people can look online and you're easily accessible in that sense, like sometimes that makes you yeah, more exciting, I guess, as a prospect in the casting sense. But it is a strange phenomenon now that is, you know, part of the bigger picture.
I do like the aspect, I think, of transparency, where now, I mean, there's good and bad to it, but now I feel like because you really know the person, you make sure that you cast good people. Like, there's no more room, yeah, right, to being mean or disrespectful. I mean, there's always going to be something behind the scenes, but a lot of those gatekeepers kind of went away because of social media. So people are a bit more aware of what they're doing and saying.
You're totally right. And I think that's ultimately a good thing, because there are so many talented people in the world, and who wants to work with a bad apple? So I'm glad that sort of gets exposed now.
Little filtration system. So with you start in This Is Us, which had all of us in a chokehold. I mean, I literally was sitting holding hands with my husband, wailing at the episodes that we were watching. What a beautiful, beautiful project.
Thank you.
And how long have you shot that for?
We shot it for almost 7 years, for 6 seasons. Yeah.
Wow. And, you know, I'm always curious about how it works with actors in terms of their personal life, if it coexist with the roles that they play. So I know that when you started shooting This Is Us, you were off the end of a hard divorce. And when you ended This Is Us, you were happily married with your firstborn. So it was, I'm sure it was a long process for you to go through. Did you feel that playing the character helped you in a way through all of that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, for sure, sometimes, I mean, I ended This Is Us, like, remarried, had a baby, I had another baby in my belly. It was a wild ride. A lot of life lived in those, like, 7 years. A lot transpired. I think that's the gift of being a creative person, right? You're able to bring aspects of your personal life to the office, to work, and parse through them, unpack them, make them make sense, or make them work for you. Bring the grief, bring the joy, bring all of those colors and all of those tools, like, to the job, and use them in, like, a new capacity. And I certainly did that with This Is Us. Like, that was a project where I was so overwhelmed and daunted with, like, okay, I'm playing this character over such a huge span of time, and all of these things, most of which I haven't experienced. Like, the show starts with me, like, in the hospital giving birth to triplets. Like, I have no point of reference for that. And it ends with me dying as an 85-year-old. So I had real no reference for anything she was going through, other than, you know, being a wife and being a partner. So it was so much fun to get to, like, find different parts of my life to bring to the table for that. And to be able to heal, I think, simultaneously from some of the, you know, more treacherous things in on my timeline. It's wonderful. I often say now, though, I wish I could go back and, you know, play this character from the beginning now, because I have some clue as to what it means to be a parent and, like, all of the wild emotions that go along with it, that I just had no idea. That I was like, yeah, I think this is what it means to, like, love your kid. It's a totally new ballpark now, you know?
I can imagine. What if you had to really think back on specific lessons that the character, the show, taught you? Do you have any ones that kind of come to mind?
I just think this overwhelming idea that we are stronger than we give ourselves credit for. Like, this is a woman who suffered such tremendous loss multiple times in her life. And yet this story was really about her and how she was the glue and how she was the sort of unsung hero, superhero of this family's story. And I don't think she thought she could continue, you know, she lost a baby, she lost her husband. Like, there was just a lot of tragedy, and she just continued to put one foot in front of the other and ultimately, again, was sort of the hero of the story. And I just loved that. She kind of sits on this pedestal to me as, like, the ultimate mom, the ultimate, like, the sacrifices she made for her family, to be the best possible version of herself and to model that to her family was something that I still draw inspiration from.
And you talked about motherhood, and you know, when you played, you weren't a mother yet. No. So you had this idea of how it feels, how it looks like. I mean, I had that before I had kids. I feel like we all have this preconceived notion.
Of course.
But then reality happens and you're like, oh, okay.
Well, it's so wildly different. Yeah.
Doesn't match. How was your experience in motherhood? Like, what did you think when you found out you're pregnant with your first? What was your idea of like what kind of mother you're going to be?
I mean, I just was always so excited about the prospect of having a family and having a family with like the right person. And when that happened, it was, yeah, I figured it's going to be all the things. It's going to be hard and joyful and just, but I also knew, I'm like, I don't think any book or playing a mom on television or hearing firsthand from friends, like any of that is really going to move the needle for me other than just like being in it myself. And it's true for anybody, like, because my experience is not your experience. It's no one's experience. Like it's all so vastly different. And I think giving myself this space to like come into that role, I'm still coming into it. Like I think I'm forever learning and I'm open and I don't know anything. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm flying by the seat of my pants, but you sort of like lean into your natural instincts and obviously lean on other people. But I guess I just didn't realize like you can't really grasp how like all encompassing it is in the best possible sense. Like you never are not a parent again from that minute. Like even if you're away on a work trip or they're at school or it's just like, it's this thing that sits in you with you all the time, you know? So I don't know.
You came into this way wiser than I am. I mean, I had my first when I was 21. No, 22.
Wow.
So I had no understanding of my own identity, let alone trying to, you know, let things be. So I had a very, you know, I painted myself a very specific picture. I'm like, if I am strict and if I'm loving and if I do this and if he eats this and this is how it's going to look like. So for me, it was a big reality check. But I love how you said that you're always growing into this role because truly now I have three boys. They're 10, 9, and 5.
Wow. Congrats.
Mm-hmm, thank you. And any time I feel like, okay, I got this, they change.
Yes.
And then I need like a whole new set of skills that I, you know, need to go back to zero and learn. So it definitely keeps you on your toes.
Oh yeah. In the best possible sense. And it's funny from like one to the next, like the second is so much easier just because I know what to expect now, just simply because I know what to expect. Like in a broad sense, like these are the milestones and these are sort of what they look like. And obviously every kid's needs are different and their personalities are different, but like it is exponentially easier once you have that point of reference and you have more grace for yourself. Because you're like, I truly didn't know what I was doing. I was doing the best I possibly could in the moment. And now I recognize like, it's okay if this nap gets skipped. It's okay if like they are not eating a vegetable every meal. It's okay, you know, whatever it is, fill in the blank. That, you know, maybe you didn't give yourself that sort of leeway the first go round. Now you're like, I'm going to relax a little bit. And I feel like I'm a better parent for it.
You know, motherhood has truly been such a mirror to myself. I always talk about the fact that, you know, our children are our greatest teachers because there's no one else you want to put that much work in for, right? At the end of the day, it benefits them. So you really go and have to look at yourself. Yeah. Have you gone through a process of like things that you saw in yourself that you just didn't like?
Oh yeah. I am far less patient than I thought I was because I have patience for most things in my life, but sometimes I'm far less patient than I want to be in these situations. And I have to sort of like I feel myself like getting frustrated or about something. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like we're all learning here. That's something that's been a really hard adjustment for me. because I just thought like, oh, there's no way I'll ever like lose my cool or blow my top or just be like, rah, feel like overwhelmed by things. And I definitely have and do. And so that's something I'm very conscious of modeling, you know, cool, calm, and collected for them because they're little energy sponges. If you're stressed out about, I didn't get the groceries on time and I got to go pick up the dog food.
They soak everything in. You know,
like all the millions of things that we all have such busy lives that keep us like tangled up. I'm like, I don't want to bring that frustration and that energy and then lose my patience when they do something
insignificant happens. Yeah.
It's just so silly, but so easy to find yourself like caught up in that moment. And so that's something that I have like had to reckon with and swallow my shame of like, oh gosh, I thought I could keep it together a little bit more, but
Truly being a parent is a very humbling experience. So I really feel like we all should be walking around with medals for every year that goes by, you know,
totally
like the veterans. I want that to happen for us. I want to go back to your role as Rebecca in This Is Us. You also played an older version of her.
Yeah.
Which is, I can't even imagine, like I honestly think of myself, if I could get into a reality where I'm playing an older me, it's such a mind trip.
Yeah.
What did you...
Yeah, I mean, it's weird
that
I wasn't playing myself, and I think that's what was easier. It's not like I looked in the mirror and felt like, oh wow, this is just an older version of
but
myself.
Isn't with every character you have to infuse you a little bit in order to give it
To give it life and vitality and all of that, for sure. But also I was able to separate myself and go like, this isn't my story, this is her story. And I didn't look in the mirror and see like my mom or my grandma or anything. I really saw this woman and this life that she led and what led her to that moment. And it was really gratifying. People are always like, oh, wasn't it so weird to see yourself like that? And it wasn't. Like I don't really have qualms with aging. Like I'm going to be 40 in a month and I'm excited about this next chapter. I can't wait for like everything that lies ahead. And sure, we all want to like feel our best, but I was always just sort of like, bring it on. All the makeup, all of the prosthetics, all of the wrinkles. And I was so grateful to be in that position to tell that story, to play that woman. I'm like, I'll do this for the rest of my life. Like, but it was fun. It was just, overwhelming, I think, initially, because like playing a mom, I had no point of reference.
Yeah.
As to who this woman was, how she moved in the world, what, like having to fill in all of that life in between, like the first episode and the second episode. It's like there was a lot of story that I had to fill in for myself about what happened to her. And, you know, just the very nature of telling a show out of sequential order like that, it wasn't as if there was like a booklet I could catch up on. It's like I had to make up some of it, obviously have conversations with writers and our creator about it, but so I could understand like what happened in those ensuing years. So I was able to bring that information on screen. That was what was most like daunting to me and what I was most concerned with.
I always wonder if, I mean, I understand that part of being a great actor is the ability to separate yourself from the character. Yeah. But do you ever lose yourself with this character or anywhere else? Have you ever had an experience when you lost yourself in a character that you played?
No, not really. I think I've always been okay at like separating the work from life. I think with a show like This Is Us, it was hard not to like have my own reaction to what was happening sort of influence performance. Like, I remember the last season, it was like there was so much that was so emotional to me that I was so heartbroken. My character has an Alzheimer's diagnosis and I just was so sad for her and for her family. Like, but I couldn't let my sadness influence the way that I brought her to life. So that was hard to make that distinction of like, Mandy is sad for Rebecca, but Rebecca isn't sad in the same way for herself. So she is living her best life still, and she is vital and present as best as she can be. And, you know, she's just handling this with such grace. And so I really had to make that distinction. That was hard. It was hard sometimes to not let my emotions. I remember a couple of times, like during filming, the director would be like, "That's great. Can you do one where you're not like bawling now?" I'm like, yeah, for sure, for sure. It was like, I needed that for me to get that out. And now we can do one where I'm a little more reserved and restrained.
And then not bring it home, right? Like that to me is also what an insane skill to have, to just be able to kind of turn it off.
Yeah, just like shake it off, leave it in the trailer, then walk home, get in your car and live your life.
That's beautiful. You mentioned how you were never too fussed about aging.
Yeah.
Which I feel like in Hollywood is a hard thing to, you know, to navigate have and to continue having that, you know, comfort of growing older and looking like it. So where did that come from for you?
I don't know. And not to say that I am some anomaly and I don't struggle with like self-image and having bad days where I feel, you know, crappy about what I see in the mirror. Like, I think we're all aligned in feeling that way. But because I've been doing this, I think, for so long, for almost 25 years now, I don't know. It's like, I wear my smile lines and all these lines on my face with like a badge of honor, because I'm like, it's because I'm joyful and I smile and I have those lines there, and I don't want to fill that up. I don't want to look different. I'm excited to see how my face sort of morphs. And yeah, I'm sure there are going to be days where I'm not thrilled about what I see. But I also like, I'm an actor. I need to be able to like move my face and move my eyebrows. And no judgment to people doing what they feel best and being the best version of themselves. Like, kudos. But I'm excited to see like how things sort of shift. And who knows, like if I feel like, okay, I want to do a little something about it, like I'm also not going to judge myself for that either.
You mentioned that you're turning 40 actually in April, right? Because
yeah,
it's month. The same. My son is April 17th. So
oh, I'm a week before him on the 10th.
There you go. What a great, great sign.
Great time of year. I love it.
Truly. What are you excited about getting into that decade?
Someone mentioned the other day that they're like, oh, you're about to reach the fourth floor. I'm like, I love that reference. Like, I'm definitely going to refer to it as that now. Like, we're all just going like level by level, floor by floor. And four is still not that high.
So not at
it's
all.
Not, you know, you're not on level 8, which if I make it to level 8, I'm going to pat myself on the back. But I feel like my 30s were the most fruitful decade of my life. The best things in the world happened during that decade, and I feel like the best is still yet to come. I don't know, like I'm sure you feel this to a certain degree, like you were just talking about having a child when you were so young, and you know, 10 years later now you're able to reflect back on who you were then. And there's no substitute for the clarity that comes with time, the wisdom that comes with time and getting older. And I love everything that like I'm becoming, and even just the awareness of taking stock of my life, like having a sense of ownership for it, not feeling embarrassed. Like you get to that age where you're just sort of like, oh, there's so much like BS out there. I don't want to waste my time and my energy like being concerned about X, Y, and Z. Like I just don't have the capacity for that anymore. And it's not something you can tell a 20-year-old, because they have to live their life and make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And make their own choices, and they will eventually get to this place too. But so it has me excited for what's to come, you know?
I feel like every decade of my life was so drastically different from the previous one. It's amazing to see how many seasons as women we go through. I mean, I look at my husband, I'm like, you're the same guy I married 12 years ago. Like not you, you're better. Like you have new habits or new hobbies, but it's, you know, it's steady. For me, I feel like he's been married like 3 times. There's like 3 different personalities throughout the years we've been together. Isn't it amazing?
It is. And it's amazing that you guys have been able to grow together and stay together throughout all of that change, because sometimes that's so, you know, it's too disruptive for one party. And so that's really beautiful that he was able to you know, grow with you and you were able to grow together. Like, I very much admire that as well. I feel similarly, and I've been with my husband for 9 years now. And we have been through a lot together. A lot has changed since we first met. And I knew from the jump, because I was in the midst of this very acrimonious divorce, and he wasn't bothered. He wasn't scared. He wasn't intimidated. He was supportive, but he was strong and steady and knew who he was. And he didn't let anything rattle him. And I just remember thinking, like, this is the person. This is ultimately, like, I had to go through that to meet this person and earn this. And oh man, it's just I'm the luckiest. We've gone through a lot together and a lot of change, and that you just feel like, whew, I can continue to change and grow and evolve and know that someone is going to be there to do that with me and encourage that and support that and do that themselves too.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that I've realized in the past year, I would say, and now I voice it quite a bit to my husband, I tell him, you know, I give you so much credit for being able to provide the space for me to go through my transition, but also to stay away and let me do my thing. Because I'm sure there are so many lessons that he already learned that he can, you know, come and be like, no, please don't do that. I know that's the outcome is not it. But he's able to identify which ones I have to go through on my own in order to pick up the lessons. And that, I think, is... that's like a real partnership, you know, marriage. I mean, there's a lot of, when we're young, we talk about these big emotions and love, like everything just feels very abstract, but it's these small, little, very clear moments that I think build, you know, longevity.
Yes. Which is what you hope for. Yeah.
What you hope for. Absolutely. You know, with this podcast, I started it because I am so into my self-discovery journey. And, you know, I'm always on this quest. And one of the things that I love about this is the opportunity to sit down with people that I admire and appreciate and dive into their journey. I remember you said, because I looked it up, you said in an interview when you spoke about your past marriage that afterwards, you realized your power and your own self-love and self-importance. And it made me wonder, is that something that you've had before and through that relationship you lost it? Or did after that marriage end, did you actually realize that you never really had it in the first place?
I think it's the latter. I don't think I had a healthy relationship with myself. I think somehow the message was telegraphed to me at a young age, and I don't know how or when, and many, many therapy sessions have not helped me conclude, find an answer. But somehow I received the message, like, in order to navigate life, it's easier to be as small and as inconspicuous as possible, to leave room for someone else, especially I think in romantic relationships, but in any relationships. It's like to keep yourself as compact as possible makes it more comfortable for those around you. And I think I took that lesson with me and you know, used it in different aspects of my life, but certainly in a romantic capacity. I think I found myself in relationships over the years where I was with someone who was, you know, domineering in a sense, like just definitely had, you know, big personalities. They took up a lot of space. They were a bright light. There wasn't any room for me except to just sort of like be the supportive person on the side. And that was just sort of how that dynamic worked. Mm-hmm. And it was much the same, I think, in that marriage as well. Like, there just wasn't room for me to work. There wasn't room for me to be myself, to bring anything to the table. But I think I was comfortable in that position. And I ultimately thought like, oh, I know how to do this. This is someone who doesn't have like a relationship with their family. Well, I have a great relationship with my family. I can model that to them. I have so many things that I can offer them while still being quiet and, you know, not taking up any space, not drawing any attention to myself. And it ultimately like came to a head when I realized like, oh, this is never going to change. I thought marriage and monogamy, there were seasons, there were chapters where you had to be there to support someone else sometimes more than they were like there to help you and have your back. And I thought that there's just a handoff, right? Like you go back and forth and, you know, I just thought, well, this is a chapter of this person's life where they just need me to bolster them and be there for them. And then ultimately it'll be my turn and they'll be there for me. And when I realized like that was never going to be the case, they didn't have the capacity to do that, nor did they want to do that. I thought, okay, well, this is either the rest of my life or I have to figure out how to extricate myself and love myself and prioritize myself. And there's so much that I want to do and so much that I want to be. And I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this anymore. I've sacrifice so much of my life and time and energy and career and just everything that this is like an empty well. It's never going to give me what I want. And that was when I realized I had to make moves. And I did. And it was not easy because, you know, I think when you're with certain personality types, like they're, and I was very easy, I think, to be preyed upon in terms of like manipulated. And I was also so young, I was 24. It was hard to like unravel myself from that situation. But when I did, life opened up in such a dramatic fashion that I never expected. It was like night and day, literally. Like I got rid of the dark cloud that was hanging over me for years and I met my husband. I hope this is us. Like life just immediately like rewarded me with, you chose yourself, great. Here's some other things some bonus gifts we're going to give you. And I really, really feel like it wasn't a coincidence, the timing of it all. It was like I put the work in. And it was excruciating. And it was excruciating for a long time. But it's weird. I have just such a like blockage about that time now too. But I did it. I did the work and never looked back.
It takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of, because you doubt yourself a lot, especially when you've been with someone from a young age. You don't really know if the decisions you're making are coming from the right place. So the ability for you to recognize that. And when you say I did the work, what does that work look like for you? Like I'm talking about first step. What did it look like for you?
Therapy to like recognize my patterns, to recognize how I found myself in a relationship with this kind of person. And was this a pattern? And why I'm drawn to this kind of behavior? What in me allowed myself to be treated that way for so long? Why didn't I have a higher sense of value and sense of myself and what I wanted? And why wasn't that like as important as their needs? And just delving into that,
Foundation. Yeah. Wow.
Back to the foundation of everything, back to that foundation of that little girl who had that message imparted in her that I carried with me in every aspect of my life and career. And it started from when I signed a record deal when I was 15 and I just like left school without really telling anybody where I was going because like, heaven forbid anyone, I was so consumed and concerned with people ever thinking that I was full of myself, that I thought I was better than them, that I just shut out that part of my life and I didn't tell anybody what I was doing. I was like, I never allowed myself to be proud of myself because I was so racked with fear that people were going to think that I somehow thought I was better than them. And that was what drove me and drove everything. So again, it was like at that age, I was just like, just shrinking and drinking and drinking because I thought that that was going to be the easiest way to navigate life.
I was never able to put into words what you just said, because you said it so beautifully, but that's literally was the journey for me. Like, I still have to push myself to be proud of what I do every single day and talk about it in a way that, you know, comes from a place of true confidence and, and, you know, respect for myself and for my work. I also had this constant voice in my head that just be like, don't shine too hard. You know, it's going to offend people. It's going to hurt people. It's going to, and I haven't been going to therapy, which obviously this is a sign for me. It's time to revisit that decision.
It hasn't been in a long time either, but yes, it ebbs and flows.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's truly such a strong voice in very specific moments when, you know, you get the opportunity to step up into your power, that voice just gets so loud that you miss a lot of those opportunities. And I feel like life keeps throwing them at you to see like, okay, are you ready now? Are you listening now? So that is truly still one of the things that I feel like I'll always battle. I don't think I'll ever master it completely.
Same. And that's okay. But, I have grace for myself. But like, we recognize it and we work on it and we acknowledge it. And it's always going to be there to some effect.
It also brings, I think, the humility, right? Like now that we are aware of it, it still is also a wonderful tool to also remind you that you are part of a bigger picture, you know, that there are people to consider and you are making decisions that affect other people. So that is a wonderful thing. I wonder if, you looking back now at your career, did that voice took away major opportunities that you kind of look back and think, oh, if I would have said yes, that would have changed the whole trajectory of my career?
I feel like there was that period of time in my life for maybe five years or so where things were really quiet and dormant just because there was no room for me to do anything else or be anybody else. That I often think back, like at a very pivotal time, like 25 to 30, like a very productive, fruitful time for a young woman, and especially in my line of work. And I just, I wish that I had had the wherewithal to like own my power, own that moment of my life, because I'll never get it back. And there's definitely like certain examples. One day I'll write a book, and maybe I'll include some of these examples, but. There are just certain things that happen in life that I'm like, I'm so like sad at myself that I allowed that opportunity to pass me by for someone else, to feel comfortable, because they don't have it within themselves to like, you know, whatever their litany of issues are. But certainly, yeah, I definitely look back, not with regret, because I am a big believer in silver linings and things happening for a reason, and it all has been an incredible lesson, as so many things in life are, and it's gotten me here. Yeah, definitely. There are moments of that particular period of time where I'm like, I wonder what, like sliding doors, like what would have happened, where I would be now. Like, it's just interesting.
I'm ready for that book whenever you are. I feel like it would be its own like nice therapy session for you to just upload it all and put it out into the world.
Yes.
That is so beautiful. So if you gone through this process, you kind of awakened, a rebirth. How do you see yourself now? How would you describe yourself now?
Oh, I'm still not very good at this. I think, if anything, that period of time in combination with, you know, feeling like I was doing something creatively that felt so fulfilling, in combination with the right partner, and then parenthood entering the equation, I feel like that best version of myself. I feel so much more at ease and peaceful. I'm better at boundaries. I have better boundaries. I'm better at advocating for myself. I'm better at saying yes when I want to. I'm better at saying no when normally like the people pleasing side of me would say like, we'll make it work. And in reality, I know like, no, I don't want to do something, right? You know, and I'm much better at sort of drawing that line now when it feels appropriate. All of those things. But again, like there's just no substitute for reaching that conclusion and getting to this point. Like it's taken all of that life experience, the amalgamation of all of that to like get me here.
Absolutely. Oh, it's beautiful. I want to go back to, another thing that just blew my mind, because I've learned that when you filmed the show Dr. Death, you were 6 weeks postpartum with a toddler.
Yeah.
How do you even gather your brain cells to like operate, to learn, to remember what you need to say?
I mean, clearly I didn't, because I said yes when I was like 4 months or 4 weeks postpartum. I was like, yeah, I'll do this. This sounds great. Like, let's move the whole family across the country to New York from Los Angeles. I mean, I'm so glad I did it. It was so much fun. But it was a real, I couldn't have done it without my husband. Like he was like, this is going to be really hard, but it's also going to be really worth it. And I think we should do it. And I was like, all right, let's do it. I mean, having support is everything. Like we had a village, like we had someone that was able to come to work with me and the baby, and I was able to nurse and work and nurse and work. Without that, I, you know, obviously couldn't have said yes to this particular opportunity. And I know that is a very privileged and rarefied position. And I am immensely grateful, because I know there most women have to go back to work and say goodbye to their babies and put them in daycare. There's no paid maternal leave. Like, all of that is just absolutely abysmal. That is the world that we're living in here in this country. But so I feel really lucky that I was able to have like the best of both worlds. I got to like still bond with my baby and be there with him every day, but I got to work and like put that hat on too. And ultimately, I felt like I went back to work with Gus when he was a month old, just because I kind of had to. Like, we were still filming, and they were wonderful to sort of accommodate the schedule a bit. But in this case, like, I made the choice to do it. And I love that, like, one day I'll be able to show my kids, like, there is also a part of mom that's really fulfilled by working. And that, like, the capacity to, like, have passion and responsibility sort of go hand in hand. And like, it is a push pull, but I think it's important to model that to them. I love my job, and it's a huge part of who I am. And I think I'm a better parent when that cup is filled too. And so I love that one day we'll be able to look back and go like, you came to work with me when you were just a little tiny newborn, and we made it work. And yeah, like, because this is their life. Like, dad's a touring musician, mom's job takes her lots of different places. And so it's like, well, we might as well like buckle up and get him used to it at a young age, because like we're all gonna be just like jumping around if we're lucky. So yeah.
Did you ever have to, that push and pull that you mentioned with work and motherhood, did you have kind of a learning curve with that? Or from the get-go, you felt pretty intuitively what needs to be done?
I mean, maybe a little bit of both, but sure. I mean, there's a huge, the second again was so much easier. The first, it was, I was sort of like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to be at work and not be like, just thinking about him constantly in the middle of like a take, and my boobs are leaking, and you know, like all the
things. Your body is reminding it, even if you can, you know, detach your mind from it, your body is constantly signaling. Oh,
constantly. And I'm like in old age prosthetics, and I'm like nursing my baby. Like, it just was so strange.
Oh my gosh.
With Ozzy, it was a little easier, because I'm like, okay, I kind of know what I'm doing. But you know, you throw in the fact that like, it's a totally new project. With This Is Us, it was like, you know, it was a family that I'd been working with for like 5 years, 6 years. So that was easy. This was a new project, new people. We were in a new place. We were in New York City. Like, everything felt otherworldly and uncomfortable in that sense, because it wasn't home. So that made it a little bit more difficult. We're in the middle of winter. I have another child that I'm also thinking about, and he's hanging out with dad all day. And it was a struggle. But I also think because of that, I was able to like really leave work at work and come home and be mom. It was like, it was really easy to make that delineation. Like, now I'm working, now I'm mom. And I liked that aspect of it.
You talk about, you mentioned community, the aspect of a village, which I think that I've always knew that friendships are important, but it's not until I became a mother, I realized the impact of it on every aspect of my life. I know you had your first during COVID, so it was a bit more limiting to have or build that community around you. Do you feel you were able to cultivate that support system?
I was. And in fact, I feel like that sort of like motherhood community is one that follows me today, that like I'm still a part of. And like, you know, we're very much all active in each other's lives, even though we live in different parts of the city and kids are at different schools and stuff. I feel like there's still that community I can tap into. And it is funny how like some friendships sort of float away and become less of a priority. And like these new friendships sort of like become front and center in your life. And people told me that, but again, until you're there, you're like, what? I'm going to be like become really close with people just because we have kids, or just because like our kids go to school together. And it is the case. It's like, that's your community. These are the people that you're spending, you know, a concentrated amount of time with. And I feel very, very lucky because you can't do this alone. Like you can't do this in isolation. And
we're not supposed to. It's truly unnatural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that I have very, very deep, dear friends now that like I can call on and ask about anything. And I'm excited.
That's such a blessing.
I'm excited as the kids grow too, to see like how those friendships deepen and how new ones enter the fold. And it's just so much fun.
I read that you mentioned one of the best motherhood advice you received from your dear friend Hillary Duff, which sent me on like my 90s heart was pumping so hard, because you know what it brought back to me? The Vanity Fair cover.
Oh, yes. We laugh about that all the time.
Are you joking me? That would break the internet today.
We were like such babies then. And to think that like, you know, fast forward 20 years from now, like we'd be like our husbands are best friends.
Oh,
she's a very, very dear friend to me.
And
we have all these kids and like kids running around. And like, yeah, Hillary is just like ultimate mom goals in every sense. She is the most incredible mother and businesswoman. And she does everything with such grace. Like, she's in that motherhood community where like, I'm like, oh, I'm so grateful and like flabbergasted that life like brought us back into each other's orbit in this capacity. But man, I'm so lucky to be able to count her
as a friend. It's amazing to me the ability though to also have a friend that like you guys were together back then. You maybe weren't as close, but someone that knew you when you were that young, it's like a different lifetime.
And we have like this evidence of it. And one day we'll be able to show our kids like, isn't this so funny? Like we knew each other back then and now look at us.
What was the experience? Because I need to dive into it. I need to like close that chapter in my life in terms of the day on the set of filming.
A lot of drama. A lot of like teenage drama for sure. Like there was a fight over a boy, I want to say, between two people. I don't even remember who. And I remember feeling like a real outlier and outsider. Like I am not a part of the cool kids club. I don't know what they're fighting about or what there's like animosity or energy or tension about. I just like, I remember one of the Olsen twins who are also on the cover. One of them had a crush on my boyfriend at the time. And I just remember feeling really cool about that. I was like, oh, well, I pick them good then, I guess, you know, like my boyfriend is someone that they have a crush on. Like, I thought that was pretty hilarious.
That is amazing. Thank you so much for giving this to me. I needed like something, you know, to fill in the blanks for me.
My pleasure.
And I do want to chat about your new project, because this is something, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is something completely new, right? Yeah. The Boar's Nest.
Yes.
The Boar's Nest is an Audible original scripted podcast, correct?
It is. It's kind of this cool new medium of, you know, scripted episodic podcast. And it tells the story of this woman, Sue Brewer, who was kind of this unsung hero of the outlaw country music scene in Nashville in like the 1960s. So the music scene that gave us Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and Kris Kristofferson and Chel Silverstein and all of these titans of country music. And she kind of opened up her home and her living room quite literally to these men to come and like write songs in her living room, which they called the Boar's Nest, and just be vulnerable, be themselves, like talk about life and songwriting and being on the road and the kinds of choices you have to make to like forge your career in a certain direction. And she kind of needled them and pressed them and pushed them and helped like them craft these like classic country songs. And at a time when all of them were unknown, like none of them were famous by any means, they were up and coming. And she just was this person who kind of existed in the annals of history that just never got her due. I mean, she was inducted in the Songwriters Hall of Fame in Nashville posthumously after she passed away. Only person that's been inducted that wasn't an actual songwriter. So I think that kind of speaks to her contributions. But she was just a really cool character that no one's ever really heard of, but her story deserves to be told.
Wow, I am so, so excited on it. I know it's going to be exclusively available on Audible. Yes. But is this, she narrates the whole series?
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of her story, like told through her eyes and ears, wow. Like what she was experiencing, like bringing these gentlemen, like coming to her home every night and writing these songs. And she was often, it was often an audience of one, or, you know, all of those guys are like hanging out together in the room and drinking beer and being rowdy and stuff. But it, those songs like were birthed in her living room. And so she was, the story's told through, it's her story, you know, this like untold story of who this woman was, and like country music as we know it today wouldn't really exist in quite the same way without her contribution.
And I feel like it's a perfect timing also for country music. I mean, it's, we're in our country era. It's everywhere.
Everywhere. I mean, Beyonce's ushering her country era in, like I'm ready for all of it.
I am so excited. You know, thinking about your career, and it's been, like you mentioned, 25 years, I read somewhere that you were asked what you wanted of your career, and you said longevity.
Yep.
That is amazing. That is,
I mean, my definition,
delayed gratification.
Yeah, because it's like, what does success look like? Everyone's going to have a different definition, and naturally, careers ebb and flow, and you could be Beyonce and still like not have everything that you want for, you know what I mean? So it's like, to me, reframing it as like longevity, that is success. Like getting the opportunity to keep doing this and on my own terms is like the greatest, greatest gift. And yeah, that is definitely success in my book.
Is there anything that you haven't done yet that is on your to-do list?
Broadway one day, like theater, live theater.
Yes.
And I don't know. I feel like there's still so much like movie stuff. I don't know. It's hard to like define and outline exactly what that would be, but theater for sure. But yeah, there's so much like, you know, film and TV stuff I want to endeavor to do too.
I'm so excited. Mandy, I know you mentioned how you look back at certain, you know, in your earlier years of your career and the opportunities that might have taken you to different places, but I'm so happy you didn't take them, because I feel like here, what you're doing now in, you know, your place where you're at and how you portray yourself in the world and how you move in the world, like it's such a beautiful timing for it all to happen. So I know we will be seeing so much more of you, and I am really, really excited for that.
I mean, what an incredible conversation. Thank you for opening yourself up. Like this was really wonderful. What a like joyful way to joyful little moment in my day. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And one last question, because I'm a big reader. Were there any books throughout your life that inspired you in any way? I know I'm putting you on the spot. So if nothing comes up,
I should have a better, my husband could answer this question for you because he's a voracious reader and I am not. I mean, I can't think of any off the top of my head that really just like changed the course of my life in a major way. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's,
I should have a better answer. What about for you? What's that one book for you?
I would say that New Earth by Eckhart Tolle was really life-changing for me. Especially with motherhood, it just helped me to navigate that push and pull. So that was really powerful. I also really loved Mindset by Carol Dweck, if I'm not mistaken. But it's really just like a beautiful explanation about, you know, growth mindset and student mindset and just a way to move in the world that is just more open. So I enjoyed that. Those are always like the two that come up to me.
I love that.
Yeah.
Here that just wanted
so
to come
cute and did a little guest appearance. Mandy, yeah. Thank you so much for your time
thank
and
you.
For being open. I really enjoyed it.
This was such a wonderful conversation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for watching this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't miss my newest episode right here. And if you're listening to the podcast on Apple or Spotify, please go and leave a review with your biggest takeaway. I love reading your thoughts. And if you have any suggestions for guests or topics, you can leave them in the comment section. And always, always remember, you are not alone.